Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is October 21st, 2017, and we're going to be live for the next 2 hours, and I have a major warning for you. Major warning. I'm going to be all over the map. It's one of those days. My notes are all shuffled up, so just be prepared. Be prepared. And first thing I do, though, is try to wake up and get my day going. I go to CEFCO Hilltop to get my cup of Fresh Joe. So you need to go to Hilltop CEFCO in Cameron, get your Fresh Joe newspaper. And they also have got everything on the Fresh Eats rack is half price. That's sandwiches, fruit, yogurts, that kind of stuff. So instead of eating that bag of chip today, maybe go to the Fresh Eats thing there and get yourself a sandwich, a piece of fruit, and some yogurt and live a little bit better today. Anyway, go to Hilltop CEFCO in Cameron. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to start off with this. The first break is not going to come for a while. This is in one of my WTF moments. I just read this and I'm like, how does this happen? Man whose puppy hanged seeks answers. This is an all points bulletin to anybody who knows what's going on here. Lampasas. A Lampasas man is left searching for answers after someone killed his puppy by hanging the 8-week-old dog from a tree earlier this week. Cole Gilmore got Sue, his Catahoula puppy, from a breeder in Oklahoma. His cousin picked up Sue, and Gilmore drove to Fort Worth to meet him there. That was just about two weeks ago. On October 14th, he posted a picture on Facebook of Sue napping on a dock with the caption, "Pretty content with life right now." 2 days later, he came home to find his other three dogs running loose and Sue hanged from a rope on a tree in his yard. "Right now, I'm just trying to figure out who did it and why," he said. So the Lampasas County Sheriff's Office, I guess, is the one doing this. Anybody out there know anything about this, you need to let the Lampasas County Sheriff know. How dare you start hanging cute little puppy dogs? I got a picture right here. I'm showing it on the screen. Okay, let me tell you what's going on today. We got, as always, three stories of self-defense, three true stories of self-defense coming out of the NRA's American Rifleman magazine, the Armed Citizen column. We can always learn good things or bad things from those stories, and I'll give you my expert commentary on it on each one. Also, we have our attorney extraordinaire in today, Benton Ross Watson. Ross, how you doing today?
It's great to be here.
It's good to see you, man. Yeah. We're styling with these glasses, aren't we?
I am. Kicking down.
Okay. And by the way, everybody, we were simulcasting out of Rockdale and Cameron. Rockdale is 98.5 KRXT, and here in Cameron at 105.1 FM KMIL. So to everybody, hello. Give us a call here at 254-697-6633. But anyway, we're going to be going over some stuff with Attorney Benton Ross Watson on citizen's arrest. I'm always interested about that, especially with us LTC people, licensed to carry. There's potentially a greater chance of that happening, so I want to talk about it. Now, today, we got something special going on. It's called Holster of Horrors. What embarrassing, scary, mean, or stupid things have you done and carry with you from day to day? Because of the Halloween coming up, I kind of thought this would be kind of neat. So
skeletons in your closet.
Yeah, skeletons in your closet. You got your skeleton in your holster. The Holster of Horrors. So purge your... No, you're staying here. I bet you got a bunch of those stories. But I need you to purge yourselves now. Draw that secret from your holster and purge yourself. Trey, this is for you. Blow your wad of embarrassment at the bullseye of freedom and become free. And become free of your horrors. So you need to get your stories ready, because in a little bit, I want you to call up with your holster of horror. I'll actually give you one of mine, okay? But you can give us a call here, 254-697-6633. Now, what else do we got going on?
At least it's a small community. Most people already know your business.
Nobody listens to the show. That's what Rick says, right? Tactical Snacky with Janae Goodman. Sounds good, but I'm sorry to say it's going to be about kitchen storage. So it's nothing about good eating, but it's going to be good storage. I like a good organized kitchen, so I'm going to be listening hard to this one. You should too. At 11, the voice of law enforcement, the Duke of Decency, the connoisseur of common sense, the epitome of encyclopedia, Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement. That'll be at 11. Today's product spotlight, brought to you by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, is the Taurus Public Defender, the polymer version. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I got to read something to you here. I'll read it to you on this product spotlight that goes perfect with my thought process and why I promote this to certain people for self-defense. It just fits perfectly. Now, we're going to have another roundtable talk today, and this time it's going to be about the potential terrorism in small towns like here in Cameron, Rockdale, etc. What's the plan of action? Is there a plan? Who knows the plan? Who runs the plan? What should the people know? And then after that, finally, Master Cindy Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, will give us words of wisdom for self-defense. Master Key will be on probably around, I don't know, 11:53, 11:55, and she'll finish up the show for us, okay? So we're going to start now with true stories of self-defense coming out of the... actually, it's not the Rifleman, I apologize. I got this one out of the Concealed Carry magazine. And this story doesn't need my expert commentary. This one is just awesome. Okay, it goes, a family of four from Hoona was walking in line through a wooded area in the favorite fishing hole when the brown bear engaged them from the woods and charged the group from the front. The first two people in line jumped out of the way, leaving the 11-year-old and his unarmed cousin next in line. I guess that's why they wear sneakers, so they can run faster. Fortunately, check this out. Fortunately, the 11-year-old's father hadn't yet put a sling on the boy's pump shotgun, so the weapon, loaded with birdshot, was in his hands. The youth brought the gun to bear. On the charging animal and fired several shots, the second and third of which dropped it, and the last of which left powder burns on the bear's mouth.
He killed bear with birdshot?
Yeah. Momentum. Yeah. Momentum pushed the Bruin's body past the boy, who had the presence of mind to put another shot into it as it slid by him. Another bit of good fortune was that just that day before, the boy's father had permitted him to remove the 3-shot limiting plug from the gun, allowing him a full magazine of rounds when the need arose. The boy's uncle was first in line when the bear charged and had a rifle slung on his shoulder, but the speed of the bear's attack did not give him time to bring it to action. I think that's one of those comments you make, like, man, I screwed up. I didn't get that shotgun on when I was...
That's one of those, hey, uncle, give me your rifle. Okay.
I think that's a great story. All right, story number two. Washington State man defends against careless camper. A Glenoma man and his wife were camping in Randall when they heard gunshots coming from a nearby campsite. When they approached the campsite to inquire about the safety of the shooting, the camper fired on them several times, including rounds that penetrated their vehicle. Retrieving a gun from their car, the husband returned a single shot in self-defense, fatally wounding their attacker. Responding Lewis County Sheriff's investigators say the shooting appears to be self-defense and will be referred to the county prosecutor for review. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, in the civilian world, if I was in this situation and I was able, I would have gotten away as quickly as possible. I'm assuming since the man went to his car to get a gun that he, one, couldn't drive away, or two, he couldn't drive away quick enough and worried about being hit, so he took that time to stop the threat. If I was in any other scenario, the threat would have been engaged with extreme prejudice. So there's two ways to go about it, I guess. Okay, story number three. California home invasion ends badly for invaders. Two men, one armed, entered a home in Brentwood in a robbery attempt shortly after 11 one night. The homeowner confronted the intruders, took up his own gun and fired on the two, killing them and ending the incident. Brentwood police are investigating the incident as self-defense. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, read between the lines on this one. Homeowner was alert. Homeowner was prepared. Homeowner was trained. Homeowner ended the threat. Homeowner needs to be applauded. So that's it. Three stories of self-defense. Very good. And there you go, Ross. Check them out. And now, let's go to my opinion piece. We're going to run long, Trey. We're going to run long. As I wrote this opinion piece, the next day I happened to see an article written by John Stossel. So let me read to you this article, this portion of this article, and then I'll read you my opinion piece. It says, CNN story polluted with lack of factual reporting. This is by John Stossel. Did you happen to catch CNN's latest smear? Anderson Cooper Show has recently featured a two-part exclusive that claims Donald Trump's EPA director had conspired with the CEO of a mining company to withdraw environmental restrictions so the company could dig the largest open pit mine in the world in an extremely sensitive watershed in Wild Alaska. The report was enough to horrify any caring person. CNN showed beautiful pictures of colorful salmon swimming in Bristol Bay, and the reporter intoned dramatically, EPA staffers were shocked to receive this email obtained exclusively by CNN, which says, we have been directed by the administrator to withdraw restrictions. Protection of that pristine area was being removed. And all of a sudden, no! A pristine area and gorgeous salmon were about to be obliterated by a mine? I would have believed, this is John Stossel talking, I would have believed it, except I happened to report on that mine a couple of years ago. I knew the real scandal was not EPA Director Scott Pruitt's decision to withdraw the restrictions. It was what President Obama's EPA did to the company's mining proposal in the first place. Zealots in the EPA had conspired with rich environment activists to kill the mine before its environmental impact statement could even be submitted. That this was unprecedented. The House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform later concluded EPA employees have inappropriate contact with those outside groups and failed to conduct an impartial, factual-based review. Now, appropriately, Pruitt undid that censorship of science. But CNN, implying devious secrecy, said, according to 10 multiple sources, he made the decision without a briefing from any EPA scientist. Shocking. But Pruitt didn't require options from scientists. He didn't approve the mine. He didn't make science decisions. He simply followed the law and allowed a company to submit a proposal. Also, despite CNN's repeated depictions of salmon in Bristol Bay, it turns out that the proposed mine would not even be by the bay. It would not even be 10 miles away or 20 miles or even 50 miles. The proposed mine would be about 100 miles away. Did CNN mention that? No, never. We asked CNN why, and why not point out that the mining company is just being allowed to start the EPA's long and arduous environmental review. They didn't get back to us on that. Now, I read that because I wrote my opinion piece before I saw this article, and it's titled, Don't Let Ignorance Persuade You. Ladies and gentlemen, ignorance is not a dirty word. It's not a vulgar word. It is a very descriptive word. And let me read to you its description, its definition. Ignorance is a noun. Lack of knowledge or information. Some synonyms would be incomprehension of, unaware of, unconsciousness of, unfamiliarity with, inexperience with, lack of knowledge about, lack of information about. So there you have the definition. Go ahead and pick the form of that word you can relate to, but understand it's not vulgar or crude. It's defining. In this country, there are a lot of ignorant people who just don't understand or care really how this world works. In my opinion, the internet is mostly to blame, along with newspapers and television shows. Information is so accessible now at such a high rate of speed that the news coming out is almost in bullet form. Yeah, the pun's intended. As compared to clearly broke down from start to finish, descriptive and informative. I challenge you to ask people at random some world event questions and see if they can answer you more than three questions deep. The headlines are not enough to be educated. They can pique your interest, but it demands some research, study, and understanding. A perfect example of this is the Second Amendment. People ask, why do you need a 30-round magazine to go hunting? If you study the root of the question, the answer would be, it's got nothing to do with a 30-round magazine. It has to do with the right to defend this country from threats, both foreign and domestic. Stop turning our gun rights into a hunting debate. What about chemtrails? You know, those big white streaks of whatever that looks like it's contrails coming out from behind the engines of commercial airliners? Most of these are made of different chemicals that affect cloud formations, which affects the weather. There's study after study and military documentation about this, yet many people don't know, don't care about it, just think it's contrails, or think I'm crazy because I've researched it and talked about it. Do you want to be an ostrich with your head in the sand, not knowing what's going to happen next? Do yourself nor your neighbor any good if that's your attitude with life. To partially quote our 34th president, Dwight D. Eisenhower, from his farewell speech on January 17, 1961, concerning the military-industrial complex here in America, he wrote this. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, that security and liberty may prosper together. Why do you think we're being dumbed down? We're preoccupied with reality TV shows, football, race riots, etc. All the while, the people in power who have nothing but sordid intentions continue doing what they're doing, profiting and breaking down our moral code with what they push as acceptable. Please, ladies and gentlemen, become once again a truly informed citizenry and call out the people who intend to do this country and us harm. Don't let your ignorance persuade you to make foolish decisions. And I'm done preaching. Trey, let's take a one-minute break. Let's do Coppolino. And when we come back, we will have attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. Don't forget, give us a call, 254-697-6633. See you on the other side. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035.
Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap and Metro Radio Program. Again, it's October 21st, 2017, and we are here live. I'm to my left.
He's got his Wayfarers on.
Check us out, man. You'll see us on video. We're like twins almost. Okay.
Look, Ross just gave you.
The number here is 254-697-6633. Give us a call. If you got anything good to say, I'll talk to you. If you got anything bad to say, you can talk to Trey, I guess. But we're going to be talking with Trey. We're going to be talking with Benton Ross Watson here about what is a citizen's arrest. Now,
you can cuss at me. Everybody does about every day, at least once a day.
No, man, you're like, it's water on a duck's back to you, right? Now, hey, Ross, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you first.
Primary office location is here in Cameron, right downtown across the street from Courthouse Big Cow, Milk Cow on the side. My phone number at the office is 254-605-4140. That's 605-4140. You can reach me by email. If you got any questions about the show or something comes up later, you think about it. Benton@watson.legal. There's no .com. That's one of those things.
And I know that email because I'm going to be sending you my bill because I keep telling you about these duffel bags worth of fan mail from you. All these ladies going nuts. But I'll send you the bill and you'll take care of it. All right,
yeah.
Ross, here's what I did. I sent you a text about what I wanted to talk about. And I think this is kind of necessary and important to know because a lot of licensed to carry people got guns and they may be in a situation where they could do a citizen's arrest. But I'm like, what is it? Is there such a thing? What conditions must be present for it to happen? What authority does a citizen have? Where does that authority come from? Can a citizen, as compared to a police officer, take control of a situation? What about constraints? Can you restrain a person? I got all sorts of questions.
We've come across this topic and touched on it in several other issues that we've covered. I think that it's also important to cover for the story you just gave about the EPA. Have more than one source of information when you're making a decision. I think that it's important to know what your authority is, but to use that authority with caution because what you see may not actually be what is occurring, and you need to make sure that you're sure about what you're seeing and or hearing before you make an arrest. Wow. As a citizen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that did actually.
Okay. Here's the basic theory is that you, as a citizen, and it goes all the way back to the days of England and before, and when we were over there in the mother country and having a right, when we had, and over here in America, when we had less people as law enforcement officers, when people were in the wilderness or in smaller communities, that maybe all they had was a magistrate, and they really had no police officers around to protect. But the concept is still good because oftentimes what you're going to hear, breaches of the peace occur without officers present, and action needs to be taken immediately to quell any threats that come about. And I think being a license to carry holder, okay, sometimes you are in a position to take a leadership role in subduing a threat to other people that are around you, including yourself. But again, I'm going to advise you before you do this to use extreme caution because I have made a living myself on going after people for false arrest, malicious prosecution, abuse process, and things of that nature. One of the things that I love to do. So Rick Dodd often does, he comes on the show a lot, he does personal injury as far as car wrecks and things like that. Well, I will come after you for personal injury, but a violation of civil rights.
So you're all for the concept as long as it's done in a proper manner.
Okay. And so we're going to talk about some of those things. So as a citizen, you are allowed to arrest an individual if they're committing Within your presence or within your view, meaning you can see it, or maybe, you know, like obviously if you're in a gas station and somebody starts to rob the gas station, maybe you're not going to see it because you're going to be ducking down for a second. So you may not actually see the offense in view, but it's in your presence because you're right there.
Gotcha, okay.
Okay, so the code actually says presence or view, because presence, you can still be there, although you may not see it,
right.
Okay? You may hear it or feel it or sense it or know that it's happening. So if that's occurring, it's a felony or a breach of the peace. And so felonies, remember, there are some things we've talked about when we're like, I can't believe that's a felony. And so I'm not going to go through the number of felonies. We've already talked about there being well over a million laws on the books. And it's too hard sometimes to distinguish a felony. So if it's clear, like a robbery, sexual assault, child abuse, things of that nature, I think that you're going to be okay in stopping and restraining the person. We've talked about the defense of protection of yourself, other people, and of your property, or property of others who you think you would have a right to protect. And so those all go into your right to arrest, because if you can defend those things, you are allowed to restrain somebody. You're allowed to use force, and restraint is a level of force that you're allowed to use. You see these concepts all sort of play in together.
What, can I jump in here? When you say restraint, are you mentioning literal restraint, or are you talking about the verbal restraint and say, don't move because I got you covered, or are you talking actually tying down? Because I made a comment here, can a citizen use duct tape, zip ties, handcuffs in the form of a restraint?
Well, I'm speaking in both. So you remember that you can have a use of force that's not actually physical force. For instance, producing a firearm to as a threat that you will use deadly force if necessary constitutes force. So you're not actually being physical with the person, although you are making a physical gesture towards that person. I think that you can make a terroristic threat to another person. Hey, man, if you make another move, I'm going to kill you. Maybe you don't have a gun, right? Maybe, or it's some other kind of use of verbal force that would constitute force, okay, in and of itself to use to be your restraint to stop that person. If you make another move against that little kid, I'm going to hurt you real bad, okay? So maybe at some point, maybe that's a terroristic threat. I think that's a gray area, but I think there are possibilities where a use of verbal force as a restraint is possible to make an arrest. And yes, definitely this comes up in shopkeeper's privilege, which I was going to mention towards the end here. And I'm going to talk about theft, which is an ambiguous offense. But let's stick with felonies. So felonies, I would just make clear that it is something that you are confident is a felony. Okay.
Can I got to bump in because you say something, it just opens up my questions. You're in a situation.
My world.
You're in a situation that, let's just say it's genuine and you have every good intent to just do good and stop somebody, but you're using terminology that you just made a comment of terroristic threat. It's almost like it's countermining your good efforts by saying wrong language.
Well, I'm looking at it from the other person's standpoint. I'm trying to protect the people listening. I'm trying to protect them to show them what the other source of information is going to say.
Okay.
The other source, you're going to have good intentions, but no good deed goes unpunished.
So you're doing good attorney, bad attorney.
And so, okay. So yes, I'm playing devil's advocate.
Gotcha.
From the other side. The other side is going to say that you committed an unlawful use of force against them, and they're either going to try to have you arrested or they're going to come after you for civil damage. Okay, and so you need to be aware that even if it was a terroristic threat in the way that the other person is couching your actions, okay, it would still be justified if you were justified under any of those self-defense, property defense provisions we talked about, or if you could show that they were committing a felony, right, in your view, and what you did was a use of restraint on that person.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I was just saying that I think, you know, you could have a terroristic threat, use of defense type of situation, and so that would allow, you know, the use of that terroristic threat if there was some kind of unlawfulness going on from the other side's activity.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And so with that being said, what is a breach of a peace? I think breach of a peace is more ambiguous than a felony. Obviously, there are some felonies that you're not going to know, or maybe you're going to be, I'm a little unsure. But for the most part, you're going to be able to spot a felony that's obvious you need to stop now. Okay, and so I'm just going to go to breach of the peace because I think this is very ambiguous, and it's even ambiguous to lawyers. There is no definition for breach of the peace other than the common law definitions that we know from Black's Law Dictionary that is from the 1760s, even that go way back, but it was updated even into the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when we're here in America at that point in time. And so now, what is breach of the peace has even evolved even more,
And we commonly refer to a breach of peace under the disorderly conduct provisions of the Texas Penal Code, which you guys would be able to find at section 4201, okay, of the Texas Penal Code, disorderly conduct. It's 42.01. And we spoke about it, too, because it's alarmingly display of a firearm, okay? Displaying a firearm in an alarming way, a way that really alarms people around you, okay? Also, like an indecent exposure. You got somebody pulling out their private parts. I mean, unless you're in New Orleans and it's flashing, you're trying to get jeans. We're all for that, right? But there are certain times when it's inappropriate, okay? So those would be times when you'd be able to say there was a breach of peace. It also means if people are fighting out in a public place, okay? Let's say you go to the football game. Rockdale and Cameron, for instance, last night, unfortunately, it was not a close game. But let's assume that it was, and you go into overtime, you got two fans really fired up, and they start fighting that thing. There wouldn't have to be a police officer for people to arrest.
What if something like that happens and they say, hey, let's go behind a dumpster and take this, you know, have this fight? Is that outside the realm?
Place? Hey, you're smart. You're going to go further than just the dumpster.
Well, my point is, it used to be a time when you can go out there and handle things, you know, against another person in a somewhat respectable manner. I say, look, we're going to get outside the crowd. We're going to go over here. We're going to solve our differences, but we'll do it in a private manner. Those days are gone, man.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think that some people just need their butt whipped sometimes, and I agree with you. I mean, and
we're being wussified,
man. There
have
been times in my life when that person has been me. Even so, I mean, sometimes it's good for people, but I'm not going to sit here and coach you on fighting, and which could possibly get you in trouble, right? If the situation occurs and you feel like they did it in an appropriate manner and you want to let it go, then let it go. If you feel like you need to step in and make an arrest because there is some danger to the public, then by all means, I'm trying to tell you how you could possibly do that. But I would make sure that there probably is going to be some sort of danger to the public. And I think you would have a good argument that if anybody else is there, if anybody else is there and it's not on private property that's owned by one of those two people engaging in the fracas, that you would be allowed to say it is in a public place.
Okay.
Okay, does that make sense?
Yes, I'll stick to my notes this time.
But I think, what you say is right. There's discretion in everything. And so when a lot of people say, well, you broke the law. The point is, you know, what was going on a reasonable thing to do? There's so many technicalities, the ways that you can technically violate the law. Sometimes it's just appropriate, and it's not appropriate in other situations. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not going to sit here and say, go ahead and fight behind a dumpster and think that you're going to be okay, because if it's behind a dumpster, it's probably in a public place.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. It does.
You got any more samurai?
No. Exactly. No, let's stick to the notes.
I give him a hard time, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so what else is a breach of the peace? Well, I want to talk about a case called Turner, because I think driving while intoxicated is a breach of the peace. There's actually been a few cases that have gone up on appeal.
Breach of the peace? That's just dangerous, isn't it?
That's dangerous, exactly. And so that's the point. Is it dangerous to the is it dangerous to the public? So while the offense is being committed, is it a breach of the peace or a felony? While it is being committed, you can stop it. Or while there is a continuing danger, right, of its renewal. And so danger. This is what goes into a breach of a peace situation. Is there some kind of danger to you or those around you, right, within the public that you need to stop? You need to stop before it gets out of hand and somebody really gets hurt. And so I think that is that's really something to cling to if you're going to use your right to make an arrest. Are these people causing a danger to others?
Okay, I got to ask this, because driving while intoxicated, obviously, is very dangerous. And somebody notices somebody's intoxicated. Give me an example of what would be deemed as a citizen's arrest on that individual who you do not want to drive on the road intoxicated. What would you be doing? Why would the person get upset or argue with you, hey, you held me illegally, and you're saying, no, it was legal because it was a breach of the peace?
Well, I'm not saying that they're going to come after you necessarily, okay? I'm just saying that you need to be... Sometimes there's been cases that where people get sued all the time. The person arrests them for trespass. Trespass in and of itself is not a breach of the peace. In and of itself, it is not a breach of the peace.
Well, let me tell you why I asked it that way. It's because if somebody's about to drive while intoxicated and the person restrains them from doing so and the deal's done, okay. But we're talking about citizens' arrest and the legal ability to do so. On the show here, I'm trying to say I'm trying to ask, well, if you do that for somebody who's about to drive and you stop them and they do argue the fact, where does your power come from to do it, and what can you do to restrict them?
Now, that is a good question, but I think you would have an equally good argument if they came after you. Probably what's going to happen is they're going to sober up the next day and say, hey, thank you for not letting me drive. I appreciate that. But assuming they don't, okay, you could probably make an argument that there was a public intoxication. Although I will say, police officers arrest college kids all the time. I get calls about this for public intoxication, and it just wasn't there, right? Because you got to be intoxicated in public and a danger to yourself or others. Okay, and so merely walking home from the bar being intoxicated, by the way, Brian Police, because in College Station Police, I will call you out. You do this all the time. I do have a satellite office in College Station, but I get calls all the time about kids being arrested for PI, right, simply because they're walking home. But a lot of times it's justified. A lot of times I don't think it is there at all. Okay, so you have to be a danger to for the public intoxication. So, yes, that's a gray area, and I can't coach you. Maybe you let the person get in, put the key in, and then you pull them out of the car, okay? Because at that point, they started that ignition, okay? And that right there could be the driving while intoxicated. There's enough cases saying that turning that ignition switch, having the car on running right while you're intoxicated, would satisfy operation of a motor vehicle, okay? And so I think right there at that point, you probably have enough with them being in the driver's seat, starting the ignition, from pulling them out and preventing them from going. If you don't want to go that far, you're probably running a risk that really no offense was committed yet. Okay? And really it wasn't a breach of peace, but there was about to be. You can still argue that there was about to be, was just on the verge of committing a breach of peace. I bet the law would protect you. And then you got to look at damages. What is a jury going to do? A jury is probably not going to do anything. If you got a good lawyer, they're going to go ask for one penny in damage. Folks, I was trying to protect everybody here. There's not a lawyer. If those facts were true, that would take the case to defend or to bring that suit on behalf of the other person, because they're not going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a one penny damage if you made a mistake in that kind of scenario that Matt's given just right now. Can you prevent that person from driving? That makes sense.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things going through my head as to how this citizen's arrest comes to play, and I've heard some things that you can't do it.
Well, okay. I'm about to give some real quick.
I'm just going to shut. Go ahead.
So running a stop sign, that's not a breach of the peace. That's a traffic violation. It's a misdemeanor. You can't do anything. Reckless driving, it's a gray area. Okay, there was a case about somebody driving in the wrong lane. It was a DWI case, but nobody knew they were driving while intoxicated at that time. They were just driving in the wrong lane. It could have been reckless driving, right? The citizen was justified in making that arrest in that type of situation. How would you do it without getting yourself killed and running in front of the vehicle? I don't know, right? I'm not telling you to go hurt yourself, but I'm just saying you could, okay? But other forms of reckless driving, like maybe going a little too fast, maybe to the point of just being reckless, I don't know that that justifies the arrest. I'm just telling you that reckless driving is a gray area, but I'm certain that there are some situations where you could be reckless driving that would allow you to, another person could be recklessly driving that would give you the right to do it. I'm going to give you the most gray area that I can think of, and it's a good case. It's called Turner. It's from 1995. It was a security guard at an apartment complex, and the security guard was not licensed in any kind of way that would have given him the authority of an actual peace officer. Okay, and so what happened there is it's early in the morning, meaning, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. A car that this guy is not used to, he's been working at this apartment complex a while, he's used to the vehicles there, he's never seen this car before, pulls in the driveway. They've recently had a bunch of drug and theft incidents going on in the apartment complex, and he was put on notice to be aware for these kinds of things, right? This car pulls in, he's not used to, and then it backs up in such a way that it could get out of there in a hurry, right? And he said that the last couple of incidents that he saw, this is how they parked so that they could leave in a hurry and escape without getting caught. And then he says, so he watches these guys leave, get out of the car, walk into the apartment complex, and he does a really smart hunter's maneuver. He backtracks and then backs around and cuts them off right before they get to where they're going. And he asks them, and he acts like he didn't see them. He says, hey guys, where you going? And they mention some lady's name that this guy never heard of, and she's not a resident of the apartment complex. He said, well, which apartment are you going to? And they say, I'm going to apartment X. And he thinks in his mind, well, there is no, that apartment is vacant. Okay. And then he says, well, did you guys park that, you know, that Jaguar or whatever that you just, that, was just drove in. No, that's not our car. Well, he knew they were lying because he saw him get out of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so then he says, okay, well, look, guys, it's part of my protocol here that I got to check everybody in. So why don't we walk back to the car? I'm going to check you guys in. They walk back over there. They actually get back into the car. And at this point, a second security officer comes up. He looks in the car and he sees one of the gentlemen pull out a revolver, a 38 caliber, okay, put it in the glove compartment. Right then, he tells them to get out of the car, right? They detain these gentlemen. They pat them down and they secure them and they secure them in another place and call the sheriff's department. The defendants argue, well, this was an unlawful arrest. We did not commit a breach of the peace, right? We did not do anything that was violent. We did not commit a felony, because even if it was unlawful carry, that's a misdemeanor. You cannot, you had no right at all whatsoever to detain us, arrest us, much less, or even detain us. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so the court said this was an issue of first impression. It was a gray area. I'm not even sure that I agree with the opinion, but I see the plight of the situation, and it was upheld. The arrest was upheld. The security guard had a right to do it, and he said, and you could tell there was some coaching here, right? You think about a security guard. Maybe it was a bright young man in college just doing security, so he may have been a bright individual, but if I know security guards, they don't usually talk in this manner to say that. There is nothing more, more consternation. That's what he said in under oath and testifying. Give me more which is part of the breach of peace common law definition, okay, that would give us consternation, right, of danger, okay, some kind of, worry that some kind of danger exists, right, than someone holding a 38 caliber pistol and not have your pistol in plain view. It was thrown together, right?
Okay, look.
It gave rise to some indicator danger to others existed.
You read that. That was kind of what I was thinking of running, so I wanted to recap it. I was thinking the same thing. It hard evidence. It was the culmination or the collection of all these little different clues that make you say, hey, something's not right here. I'm going to detain it or hold it. So your story there, it kind of backs up the question I was going to ask, but I have to ask this before, because we're about to be out of time. What type of restraints can you use without worry of it coming back on you? Like I said, can you, if you feel like this guy's going to get away, can you duct tape him?
You're going to have the same restrictions as a police officer. It's got to be reasonable and necessary.
Okay.
Right. It cannot be unnecessary force. Okay, so even though a police officer can put you in handcuffs, right, they're limited in what they can do. And know that theft is a little bit different. You do have a right to arrest somebody for committing theft. You especially have a right to restrain them, right, for committing your own property. There's actually some exceptions in the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, the shopkeeper privilege, that would allow you to do it. But I caution you to even use restraint in that situation, because we've talked about the guy that ran with a handgun trying to stop him. A lot of times, if you pursue him out of the store, you're going to lose that protection.
Threat's over.
You better make sure that you got them right at the moment of theft, or trying to leave the store with it before you do it, or trying to leave your property. Come to a lawyer before you go over to somebody else's house to retrieve the property and make sure that you're going to be within the law.
Speaking of buddy Ross, how they can get a hold of you?
My phone number is 605-4130. That's 605-4130. You can email me, Ben, at Watson.legal. Ben is Watson.legal. Come see me over here on the square. Cameron at 105 East Main Street, 105 East Main.
So, very good, Ross. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Always great entertainment and great knowledge coming through. So we thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, guys.
All right.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MISO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Arch Koontz, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, oh, you better learn fast. Wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Butros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program, October 21st, 2017. And I want to talk to you about Holster of Horrors. What embarrassing, scary, mean, or stupid things have you done and carry with you from day to day? Purge yourselves now. Draw that secret from your holster and purge yourself. Blow your wad of embarrassment at the bullseye of freedom and become free of your heart. Now look, the number here is 254-697-6633. Give us a call. I'm going to tell you a story that's embarrassing to me, but I'm going to tell you, okay? It has to do with a Remington Model 11 shotgun. And I'm down in my gun shop. I'm working on it. And I've got it standing up on its butt, muzzle facing the ceiling. No, I didn't shoot the ceiling, okay? And I'm checking it out. I know that the weapon is not chambered with a round, but I have to check something. So I unscrew the cap to take the barrel off. I've got 5 rounds in the magazine tube. I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to check something out real quick. You know, foolish. So there I am behind the counter, screw the cap, pull the barrel off, but the pressure of pushed out the thing in the tube, and they catapult with high velocity straight up to the ceiling and shatter the fluorescent light bulbs that are right above my head. And when it does that, I can feel the rattling of the tube, the magazine tube, and the spring flying out, and all of a sudden this loud smash pop sound. The light goes out, it's blackness, my eyes are shut, and I'm being rained upon with shards of glass. And I'm like, am I dead? Did I just die? What happened? Oh, I open my eyes and I see this cloud of white dust, and I realize wishness and stupidity I did, and I for quite some time. So now I've released myself. I've shot the wad of embarrassment onto the target of freedom, and I'm free now from this embarrassment. Now everybody knows. So when you see me, you can just, I don't know, go make sounds of breaking glass or point your finger at me or whatever. But give us a call, 254-697-6633, and share your holster of horror with me, okay? And until that time, you can call any time up during the show for quick things that are coming up. Had a great time. A lot of people, gals, bring your gal to the range. They have free range time, and you'll have a blast, pun intended. Classes, and we got seminars. And we can create a date specially for you, modify it to meet your needs. And if you go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the High Cap Adventure page, you'll see a lot of the flyers there, the different types of seminars that we do. So check them out. So go to the testimonial page. And ladies, this is primarily for you. I got to ladies do the testimonials, because that once you're in the class, and it's an all-ladies class, your hair guys being around, and it's a lot of fun. You can just learn a lot of stuff without that weird tension in the room of the guys being there. So check that out. Check out the testimonials. Give me a call if you got 5 or more, and we'll set something up for you. A lot of things going on. And don't forget, also, the second Friday of every month is the Round Robin competition. Those are lots of fun. Good job. Get to shoot a lot of guns. Shop.com. Check out everything there. Go to the Facebook page. Like us on Facebook. Let's get the numbers up. Also, lots of videos, interviews, product demos on my YouTube channel, Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel. Check that out and look at all the videos there. X3. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll meet Janae Goodman. Everybody loves Janae. Going over kitchen storage, utensil equipment care. And that's always a good thing. I'm a neat fanatic, an organization fanatic, so I'm going to listen hard. So we'll see you on the other side. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap decided to carry a handgun for self-defense. You better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or seminar to get you started. 721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. Games is reality. He starts now. AaronsGunShop.com.
Thanks for listening in to another segment of Tactical Snacking. I'm Janae Goodman, and today I'm going to help you make the most of your kitchen space and hopefully help you increase some longevity of your utensils. So let's get started with pots and pan lids. To get that eyesore of a cupboard under control, utilize some magazine or file racks. You can use the rack to organize your lids on a wall or door. These make for great recipe card storage. Alternatively, you can use plastic or metal file magazine holders if you keep lids in a cabinet like I do. Yes, I am referring to those cut-off rectangular boxes for holding folders and reading materials. These make it easy to organize your lids by size and still makes them handy to reach. I recommend the larger boxes to appropriate. You can always buy multiples as needed. Avoid using tile holders to significantly decrease the need for replacement and to discourage bacteria growth. And guess what else? File holders are fantastic for storing your plastic wrap, foil, parchment, and wax paper rolls. I think Velcro would be an interesting way to hold these into place. If you want to avoid whipping out some power tools, here's a pro tip. Use masking tape to line an area before you put Velcro down to avoid any paint peels. Tension rods are a kitchen's best friend. They make for a neat hanging shelf for a window garden, and they can help organize under-sink cleaning sprays. Small tension rods can make for a handy do-it-yourself paper towel holder as well. It would only be right for me to encourage you to paint and decorate them to match your project. For an easier fridge cleaning experience, try lining your shelves. Silicone mats are great for this purpose, but plastic wrap can also be used as a pretty handy alternative. Glad's Press and Seal Wrap works best, but I've found that this works with regular cling wrap as well. Make sure to overlap the edges of your wrap to ensure that spills don't seep through the cracks. Also, remember to clean and completely dry your shelves before wrapping or covering them. If you have the time to organize your pantry this weekend, do so by item type. This will help tremendously when you're searching for items or getting ready to make a shopping. You can even put the items in clear plastic shoe boxes and label them with masking tape or your handy dandy label maker. What should you not put in a dishwasher? Well, for starters, non-stick skillets actually lose when you continue to put them in dishwashers. Knives are typically dulled. Wooden items such as spoons, cutting boards, and chopsticks can split and warp. Insulated cups are in danger of losing the vacuum seal that sells their model. Items with stickers on them should be scrubbed to the dish. You can get the sticky scum off by soaking the item in vinegar or scrubbing it made from oil and baking soda. There's always been a debate about stainless steel pans, but I can't really think of anything aside from discoloration that would discourage you from putting it into a dishwasher. Always check the item to make sure that it is dishwasher safe. An item will usually have its information printed directly on it. If it is not dishwasher safe. Along with that list, cast iron items should never go in a dishwasher. This undoes the pan's seasoning and usually results in rust. Your grand prix. Most cast this long, however, usually due to improper cleaning. You should never apply a brace of soaps to your cast iron skillet. In fact, do your best to avoid the application of soap unless it is absolutely necessary. Stuck on food, scrubbed off using a mix of coarse salt and a small amount of oil or water. Make sure that your skillet is completely dried and lubricated after each use. Allowing your cast iron items to air dry promotes surface area rust. So it's best to dry them. Lubrication is an absolute must when it comes to cast iron maintenance. A thin layer of oil, typically vegetable oil or even Crisco shortening, will increase the life of your pan and promotes a non-stick, easy to clean surface every time. In the kitchen, so please send your bag tactical snacking at yahoo.com. I'm keeping your.
Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. And High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Vitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses, including asbestos exposure in Dodd Krebs Law Firm. You are never treated like a number. Cases are at Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 88-FIRM.
It is now time for the Enters, the communicator of common sense and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Good morning, everyone. Hope you're having a great Saturday today. My little got something very exciting to tell you today. It's till Christmas, just 9 more, so start your shopping soon. And, you know, this is, unfortunately, it's getting to be a sad time of the year. About 2 or 3 football games left in the high school football season, so I will be staying home this year. Unfortunately, some teams are not having as good as years past, and some are having great years. But, you know, what I want to do today is we're going to talk about something that's a little bit different in the text. That it's going to be a two-part series today, but I'll bring back, because I want to think about some things, and I know a lot of people have seen it on the news. You know, it's a sad fact of life in the 21st century that active shooters and active shootings have become a regular occurrence in the United States. We only hear about massive ones such as Las Vegas, a nightclub in Florida, but 300-plus active shooter situations, more than one life has been taken. In other parts of the world, terrorist groups are using active shootings to, well, terrorize, to be honest with you. While the media focuses on the firearm storm and the firestorm of political hate these events create, I've rarely, you know, if maybe any news media, talk about what people are actually supposed to do if they're, according to the FBI, common country, in my opinion, but we one needs to own themselves in the line of fire or in the middle of one of these situations. Now, I know we think we're living here in Central Texas. It'll never happen here. I know here about 20, we can't have that kind of. Over the years, I've talked to a lot of military, tactical, and law enforcement professionals who spent their years training and dealing with violent marshals. We have SWAT officers that are involved. Same question. What's an average Joe Blow citizen like me supposed to do when faced with a gunman who's indiscriminately firing at people? You're one arm up. But how many have that? And how many would have the, and I'm not going to use the word I would normally use, but the CODs to be able to do something if the time came? So today, you know, I want to talk about what people have always said. You know, I've looked at this expert advice on how to best self in a situation with an act myself. What can we do? How to survive a shooting is much like learning how. Now, we understand that a lot of times in airplane crashes, people don't survive. Which in an event is statistically unlikely to happen to you. Statistically, they're very, very low. But what if? What if? If we took that mentality on air, why do we carry car insurance? Why do we carry life insurance? Why do we carry health insurance? We do that because of the what ifs. What if it does happen? What if we do have to use it? But, you know, if things like this do happen, there are ways that we can increase our odds of survival. And even a little bit of surviving, a little bit of increasing our odds makes it well worthwhile the practice that you're going to have to do. Sometimes we need to keep our minds straight. We need to keep in mind that you're probably going to be on your own in an active shooter situation. And a study done by the FBI that most active shooters and most active shootings end in 2 minutes or less. Think about that. 2 minutes or less. That's not enough time for most law enforcement agencies to arrive. So when you start hearing gunshots in places you shouldn't be hearing gunshots, understand that you don't have much time to think about what you're going to do. That's why you need to think ahead of time. You got to know what you're going to do before it actually happens. And I know that people don't want to think, and it's something horrific that we don't want to plan on, but you've got to be prepared in today's world. When any sort of emergency situation strikes, be it an active shooter or even a fire, the natural response for most people, surprisingly enough, is not to do anything. And what's the old saying about the sheep and the wolf? We highlighted several of the reasons for the passivity of people in the past. We've talked about, I don't want to get involved, it's too dangerous, et cetera, et cetera. But when your life is on the line, that passivity can't survive. You want to survive. You know, the normalcy bias that most people have causes victims to act like everything is fine, even though things are far from being fine. Our brain is predisposed to assume that things will carry on in a predictable way. When the pattern is broken, folks, it takes a long time for the brain to perceive that change or that action. This is why many people who witness traumatic events report that it felt surreal, like they were watching a movie and it wasn't really happening. It's kind of like if you've ever been in a really bad car crash. Everything goes in slow motion. And that's what happens when somebody's in the middle of some type of a situation. It's not till after it's over with that you realize what you've done and what you've been through. They also often say that at first they thought the gunshots were fireworks or a car backfiring or a book falling or something that was popping. Then they realize that it was actual gunshots. As a matter of fact, if you talk to or listen to some of the people who talked about the situation in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, many of them thought it was part of the act that was on stage. They thought it was fireworks going off. Well, unfortunately, we learned that it wasn't fireworks. And that's what people have to sometimes change in their minds. Another bias that keeps us from taking action is our natural tendency to follow the crowd. If we see that everyone else is cowering in fear or backed up by whatever, then our natural tendency is to do the same. We got to stand out. Doing the same gets you hurt. The way you overcome these inclinations toward passivity is deciding exactly what you do in the event of a shooting before one ever happens. You got to have a plan, folks. You got to plan. I know it seems morbid, but you really should visualize what you would do in various situations where an active shooter to suddenly intrude upon your scene or your house or where you're at. What would your plan be if you were in the office and heard the shots coming from the floor beneath you? Would you have time to run? If so, where would you go? If you heard the shots just down the hallway and there's no place to run or hide, what would be your next step? Visualize your plan as much detail as you can. If I was a school teacher, if I was an office manager, I would have that in my mind right off the bat. If an active shooter situation does happen, you only have seconds to react. Only seconds. You don't have time to figure out what you're going to do when a guy starts spraying a building full of gunfire. By having a general preconceived plan, you give yourself at least a head start. And some of us need head starts. You've got to plan. You've got to have that head start. You've got to outthink what's happening. Remember, in any conflict, there are multiple loops going on. It's your loop versus the shooter's, and the first to complete their respective decision-making cycle usually wins the fight, and that's in life and everything else. By coming up with a plan of what you should do in an active shooter situation before it ever happens, you're already engaged in the second step, folks, orientating, getting oriented to where you're at. Should you encounter a shooter, you can immediately start a cycle of how to protect yourself and remember what your plan was. Always be oriented. Always be oriented. You know, you need to maintain your situational awareness wherever you go. And I thought about this a lot. How many of y'all have ever gone somewhere and you're thinking, oh, I need to go to the restroom. I need to go to the bathroom. Well, where's the closest bathroom? Well, I'm going to tell you, when I go somewhere, that's the first thing I scope out. Because you never can tell when you got to go. But same thing as with something happens when you're in a shooter situation. You got to protect yourself. You got to know where your exits are. I've talked in detail about situational awareness before in burglaries and theft prevention. So rather than getting into the nitty-gritty here, let's think about a few important principles as they apply to shootings. Number one, I call it condition yellow. You got to stay in condition yellow in today's world. And that's best described as relaxed alert. Can you understand what that means? Relaxed alert. There's a specific threat situation, but you have your head up and you're taking in your surroundings with all your senses. Most people associate situational awareness with just visual stimulation, but you can also learn a lot about a particular scenario from listening. This is especially true for active shootings. If you hear gunshots or something sounds awful lot like gunshots, then that should be a sign that you need to start immediately preparing to take action. How many of you have ever been laying in your bed at night and I'll think you hear gunshots outside or think you hear footsteps outside? You don't just lay there. You get up and you do something. Same thing with an active shooter situation. Though, our senses are slightly heightened in condition yellow, it's also important to stay relaxed, though. And how do you do that? Well, staying relaxed ensures that you maintain an open focus, which allows you to take in more information about what's going on around you. It keeps your mind and your head on a swivel. Research shows that when we get nervous or stressed, our attention narrows, causing us to concentrate on just a few things at a time. You can't do that in an active shooter situation. A narrow focus can therefore cause you to miss important details around you in our environment. The bottom line is this, folks. Don't have your nose constantly in your smartphone and don't zone out. You should open your eyes, ears, and nose and calmly and constantly scan your environment to take in what's going on. Establish baselines and look for anomalies. A baseline is what's normal in a given situation and will differ from person to person, environmental to environment. A baseline is in an office would be people working at their desk or chatting in a lobby. A baseline at a restaurant would be people in uniforms coming in and out of the kitchen and customers entering and exiting at the restaurant through the front door. All of these things are what your baseline would be established. You know, when we establish that baseline, then we know what to look for. When one of your children is not acting normal, which some people say children never act normal, but when one of your children is not acting normal, you immediately start thinking about what's wrong. Or when your wife comes in and gives you that look, and you say, that look. It's kind of like saying to your wife, whatever. You've got to learn that sometimes you have to keep your mouth shut, look around, and think about things. Now, to wrap up today, I just want to talk a little bit about our environment again. When you go somewhere, pay attention to what's around you, the people that's around you, and the times that you're there. If you don't, then you're not in condition yellow. Next week, we're going to expand that condition yellow, and we're going to take it a little bit further, and we're going to go into some details on what you actively can do to protect yourself in an active shooter situation. Please don't miss it, because, folks, I'm telling you, as bad as I hate to admit it, there are going to be more shootings. There are going to be more people involved in shootings. It's coming the holiday season. It's coming sports event season. We need to know how to protect ourselves. So until next week, everybody be safe. Take care, and have a great weekend, everybody.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Butros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Welcome back. back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's October 21st, 2017. Now, don't be shy. Give us a call, 254-697-6633. Tell us one of your horrors in your holster. The holster horrors. What embarrassing, scary, mean, stupid thing have you done and carry with you from day to day? So purge yourself. Give us a call, 254-697-6633. This section is our product spotlight. And it's sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer. Give them a call at 254-983-4417. We're going to be talking about this week the Taurus Public Defender 45 Long Colt and 410 gauge. It's the polymer version. They've got one on the shelf right now. If that one goes, they can get you another one. But go there, check it out. Arch Kuntz is the owner. And the staff is Clint, Dennis, and Mike. They're all great guys. Very helpful, very friendly. They got pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, accessories, reloading equipment, the work. So give them a call, go there and check it out, and let me read to you some information concerning this firearm. Now, I know some people with this. I've shot one of these, and it's pretty awesome, but I'm getting this review off of usacarry.com because I like other people's opinions. So let me read to you bits and pieces of this review. The Taurus Public Defender polymer today we'll be talking about is the 45 Long Colt 410 gauge. This little hand cannon holds 5 shots, and Taurus claims it weighs in at 27 ounces unloaded. The author scale here by Rob Tuck says it showed it weighed 23.5 ounces. Coming from the sales success of the Judge Revolver, Taurus released the Public Defender polymer to be considered as a concealed carry weapon. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is me speaking. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the Facebook page, you'll see me holding these two guns. It's going to be the Taurus Public Defender and then the Taurus 38 Snubnose to show you the difference in the sizes, which isn't very much. So if it's a good consideration for a concealed carry gun, this Public Defender. And if you look at the picture, you'll get to see why. Back to the article. The relatively small size, having an overall length of 7.65 inches, is very good for possible concealment. The barrel is a mere 2 inches long, and the gun at its widest point is only 1.5 inches. Taurus also includes the Taurus safety lock, which is in the form of a small key that gets inserted just below the hammer and turned. Once the gun is locked, it cannot be fired. The front sight is a red high visibility with a fixed rear sight. The red dot sight allows for obtaining a quick sight picture and helps keep track of where the barrel is pointing. Overall, the sights are good right out of the box. The grips are rubber, Taurus calling them their ribber grips for the numerous ribs running horizontally along the handle. The gun can be fired in single or double action mode. The trigger pull is over 12 pounds in double action and is smooth, which is pretty good. In single action, the trigger pull is much less, coming in at slightly over 5 pounds. The trigger itself has grooves the entire length to provide for a better grip and feel to it. The frame is made of polymer over a steel frame. The top strap is nice and a flat fake rented rib at the barrel. The hammer is bobbed to keep it from catching on things like clothing or inside of a purse. Even though it is small, it is easy to find and operate. The top surface is knurled so as to provide a surface that is easy to grip. Small touches like that and the trigger grooves are welcome features. The profile of the gun is dominated by the large cylinder. The cylinder release is on the left side, behind and in line with the lower edge of the cylinder. Once the cylinder is deployed, the standard rod type unloading feature is present. And just to comment on that, I'm pretty confident in what I'm about to say here, is that the Public Defender only takes 2.75 inch shotgun shells. All the other models, I believe, take 3 inches, and you can put anything up to 3 inches there. That was a side note. The Public Defender is an easy to load and shoot as any other revolver. Because of the various calibers and loads that can be shot with this gun, I thought it best to use a variety to provide a little perspective. I had some 250 grain 45 Long Colt reloads that I used to practice with, and considering the price of ammo these days, this saves some cash while providing a good reliable cartridge to shoot. The recoil with these reloads is very manageable. I was able to hit center of mass at 7.5 yards consistently with the Public Defender with these rounds. Now, make no mistake, this is no competition gun. It's not meant to be. You aren't going to be able to place 1-inch shot groups with this thing, and I don't know about that. It's like I said, it all depends on the shooter. You can get pretty darn close. You only need to be able to hit what you're aiming at, not put an eye out, and that's true for the purpose of this firearm. Now, the Public Defender excels at putting lead down range. To that, since this is meant to be a home defense gun, I did not test for accuracy beyond 7.5 yards. Most experts agree that most home defense situations will happen within the space, so I use that as my yardstick. The high-vis red front post is easy to maintain on target with a good sight picture. The trigger is smooth all the way to the break, My last set of test rounds were the SXZ410, the triple-odd buck design. designed for handguns, and this stuff is impressive. Each shot shell contains 3 triple-odd buck 3-ounce balls. Felt recoil is very manageable, and the public defender was easy to maintain a good sight picture after each shot. I like the Taurus Public Defender Polymer very much, and there is very little available with the compact size and versatility of this gun. In my opinion, this is a great frontline home defense gun, much shorter and lighter than a shotgun. It takes some of the intimidation factor out of handling a long gun in the house. Often in those situations, a long gun can be put to a disadvantage if you're trying to turn a corner. That is where this weapon excels. In close quarters, this can put a great deal of firepower downrange in a very compact and easy-to-use platform. With no external safety to fumble with, it can be rapidly deployed in an emergency situation with devastating effect. It might also be good to consider for those who carry in your car. This will easily fit in the glove box, center console, or lockbox in your vehicle. Author often carries his in the center console when he goes off-roading. It makes a great snake gun and, well, whatever else might be present to threaten you in the outdoors. If you need a self-defense platform that puts out great stopping power, it's easy to handle, and can fire a variety of rounds, this may be the answer for you. So now we're talking about the Taurus Public Defender in the polymer version. And ladies and gentlemen, when I read that, this is being sponsored by ANC Firearms, and they've got one there. You want to give them a call at 254-983-4417. But as I was looking at this article, I happened to see another article. And the one little snippet headline here is Home Invasion Reported. It says a woman said her door was kicked in early Saturday morning by 5 men with masks covering their faces. Officers went at 1:30 a.m. to the 800 block of Betsy Ross Drive and talked to the victim. She and her 2 children were at home when the door was kicked in and the men came in. The men searched throughout the house, didn't take anything, and the woman said didn't know what they were searching for. The officer found no suspects. The subjects are described only as tall men, and if anyone has information about this reported home invasion, call the Temple Police. Now, I brought that up because if you're a woman specifically, or anybody for that matter, with kids, and you got this little Taurus Public Defender and you can't handle a shotgun, you got a freaking shotgun in the size of a revolver that you can shoot buckshot, that's 3 rounds per shot, 5 rounds, that's 15 rounds of buckshot heading towards the bedroom door if somebody invades your room. And it's going to make a devastating effect. The price is right. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out the Facebook page. Look at the picture and the price tag. Give them a call at 254-983-4417 at ANC Firearms. Remember, they sponsored the program. Before you go shopping around trying to find it for $5 cheaper or something, give them a call, ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard it here on the show. Tell them that I said hi. Go there, buy your gun, support the sponsor who supports the show. It's a circle of life. Okay, without them, I can't stay on the air. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. The Taurus Public Defender. Hey, Trey, let's go out on a break here. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do a little round table talk here with Chief and Trey. And we're going to be talking about terrorism here in a small town and what happens and what you can do and what our local authorities do to help prevent it or take care of it if it does happen. So we'll see you on the other side and we'll talk about it.
Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. You decided to carry a handgun for self-defense. You better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Vitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's October 21st, 2017, and we're going to be talking, terrorist in your small town, how it works, what, not really the terrorism aspect of it, but how it's responded to. And I want to be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen, this is a very big topic. I don't know where I'm going to go or where it's going to end up. I got Trey here with me. I got retired Chief Randy Dixon sitting to my right here. We're going to discuss some things. And I looked up on the Milam County website, and I was looking at the emergency management plan. It's there for everybody to see. It's public information. And I was just looking at who gets the information, where does it go, so on and so forth. And just to give you an idea of my topic, and then, Chief, maybe what I'll do is I'll have you explain what you were just explaining to me.
Yeah, I was going to recommend, you know, maybe before we really get into the meat of the discussion, maybe outline for the listeners that...
Just looking at who gets the information, where does it go, so on and so forth. And just to give you an idea on my topic, and then, Chief, maybe what I'll do is I'll have you explain what you were just explaining to me.
Yeah, I was going to recommend, you know, maybe before we really get into the meat of the discussion, maybe outline for the listeners that the process first, so they know where we're coming from.
Okay. What I was thinking was, you know, you hear all these stories of Mandalay Bay or Sandy Hook or the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, or the Columbine or Virginia Tech shootings, all these big shootings, and a lot of mass chaos goes on, and there's got to be some organization. And so there's groups of people in your community who takes care of these things, but we just don't know how it is. So I'll tell you what we'll do, Chief. Let me do this to you. Let me hand this over to you and tell everybody what happens in a scenario. God forbid we have a school shooting here. God forbid, man. What's going to happen?
All right. The first thing that's going to happen is, obviously, you can't control where the situation is going to take place. The situation is going to be your forefront, and you're going to send your first responders. Let's say hypothetically we have, and I'm not going to use a school, but let's say a Sunday morning church service. So you have 100 parishioners inside of a church, and let's say hypothetically it happens at 10:30 in the morning when the crowd just gets there. Well, somebody is going to immediately call law enforcement and report that there's an active shooter inside the church. Well, the next thing that's going to happen is the 911 system is going to broadcast it to the first responders, the police, ambulance, EMS. At that point, in almost the same scenario, the EOC is going to be set up. That's Emergency Operations Center. In Milam County, Susan Rinders, one of the finest individuals I've ever met, someone who has a vast knowledge of emergency management, will then set up a system where people are then delegated to do certain things. You have a law enforcement, a fire service, an engineer. Then you have your public works, utilities, and transportation. Everybody is a separate entity. And unlike most line items, you know, you have your county judge who is actually the mayor, if it happens within a city, who is the actual head of the emergency management plan. But it works in reverse. They get the information, but they don't make the decisions until something's already happening. So you have most flow plans work from the top down. In an actual incident, it goes from the bottom up. Because your ones who are there at the first, your first responders, the ones who are actually on the firing line, and the ones who have the best idea, best knowledge of what's happening, then reports it back to someone who reports it to someone above them, who then reports it back to the whoever the EOC commander is, and it works in that order. That's the only way it would work. The United States is based upon what is known as ICS,
Almost every single organization that has an emergency plan operates on ICS. That's the Incident Command System. And there's training. FEMA has training for it. And it has to work that way. That way everybody knows what their job is. One of the things that I can assure you about Milam County is that Ms. Reinders has tabletop exercises, has staged exercises every year. So everybody has a knowledge of what they should do, what their role is. It might be an active shooter. It may be an airplane crash, or maybe a massive tornado or an explosion from the railroad. But you have to know what your role is. Without knowing your role, an emergency plan will not work. The same happens when you have a terroristic situation.
Okay, and so you're looking at your organization chart here, and then it also breaks it down. I think I was looking at the next page here.
Right.
It actually says who's in charge of what situation. For example, if it comes down that a warning has to be given out, that falls to the county sheriff, and communications goes to the county sheriff. I'll read down all the different topics that are covered just to show you how thorough that it is and how much work is involved. You've got warnings and communications, like I said. You've got shelter and mass care. That's assigned to Homeland Security Coordinator. Then you got radiological protection, fire chief. Evacuation, county sheriff. Firefighting, obviously the fire chief. Law enforcement, county sheriff. He's the lead man in the county. Health and medical service, county health officer. Then you got public information. That would be the county judge. Recovery, finance director. Public works and engineering, county commissioners. Utilities, information technology director. Resource management, county auditor. Direction and control, executive assistant to the judge. Maybe, you know, on some of these we need a little explanation what they do, so we'll go over that. Human services director. Hazard mitigation, CTCOG. That's Central Texas
Council of Governments.
Hazardous materials and oil spill response, fire chief, search and rescue, fire chief, rescue officer, transportation, ISD, transportation director, donations management, homeland security coordinator, legal, county attorney, and terrorist incident response, county sheriff. Some of those, chief, let's explain a couple of those.
All right.
Which one was it? It was like recovery. What does that mean?
Okay, recovery is going to be, like, for instance, once an incident happens, let's say that we have bring bulldozers down, or if you have to bring cranes down, or if you have to bring heavy equipment down, your finance director is going to be the one that's going to be authorizing the expenditures to bring that down.
So recovery is cleanup after the fact.
Cleanup after the fact, yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, with your extensive knowledge on it, why don't you go over each one and just give an idea of what each particular topic is actually going to be covering.
All right. And let me kind of explain this in one way. Every emergency management plan, like for instance for the county of Milam, there's one for the county, and then each city, incorporated city, has an emergency management plan as well. That's considered an annex. And that annex doesn't supersede the county plan, but the county plan doesn't necessarily supersede the city's plan either. So the one we're going to talk about right now is basically about something that happens out in the county outside of incorporated city limits. Number one, the sheriff is going to be in charge of the actual situation. He's going to be the one that's going to tell people, assign people, if he needs to ask for help, whatever it may be. And then your communications is usually going to be on site from the sheriff's office. However, the sheriff's department in Milam County does not run the 911 system. The 911 system is split between Rockdale and Cameron, with the river being basically the boundary on who gets what calls. So that'd be a little bit different. Your Homeland Security Coordinator, once again, that's going to be Susan. Reinders should be in charge of getting shelter and mass care if we need it. She works real close with the health department, with the emergency medical people, and she has it all planned out in her annexes to get the right people there in case of a mass casualty. And for instance, God forbid, let's say a tornado comes through a city and kills 100 and some odd people. In her plans, she has the working relationship with some different companies that would bring refrigerated trucks down to store bodies in and things of that nature. And then you look at your law enforcement, your firefighter, your evacuation. Evacuation, that if out in the county, would be up to law enforcement. Your public information in the county, your judge is your public information officer. And that, what that does, that eliminates false information going out. because you only want to have one spokesman.
Right.
Because you're going to have tons of news medias coming down. You're going to have people bugging you for information. So you're going to have somebody in Bell County. For instance, I was the PIO for the Emergency Management Service, the Homeland Security there for a number of years. The county judge didn't necessarily do the public information. It was delegated to me, but I used the information that he provided. Mm-hmm. You have to have those controls. And then every person, every different organization within the county has certain annexes that they have to follow. Basically, it's an outline, a blueprint of what they're supposed to do.
Chief, what happens if the system gets overloaded? Because what we're talking about are some of these instances like the
Mandalay Bay,
or Sandy Hook, or these other situations that I mentioned, which is not expected. You know,
right.
And nowadays it's beginning to become part of the norm, but we're not set up for that. If you have a small town here, it's limited resources, and it gets something like that, what do we do to cover all the bases?
Well, what you do is you have training, or at least you better have training. You better have somebody, whether it's your police chief, your fire chief, or your sheriff, who's got knowledge of how an organizational plan works when you have a mass disaster. And the best thing you can do is get on that telephone and call for help.
Who do you call? Do you call the citizens of the county and say, hey, I know these people, I know what you can do. Is there a roster of people? I'll give you an example. I know a handful of law enforcement officers, and I tell them, look, you know me, we have a good rapport with each other, and you got my number. If something goes down, call me. I'm there. If I'm in the area, I will be there to back you up, cover your six. Just let me know. I mean, yeah, I don't know if I want to be in the area, but if I am and you need me and you got time to go, I'm there. How would the county do that if it's getting overrun with its services?
It'd be real simple. They have mutual aid agreements. And for instance, Milam County, the first thing we do, if we had a major disaster here of some kind, or a major shooting here where a lot of people are hurt, dead, or whatever it may be, Ms. Reinders would get on the phone to the Austin Emergency Management with the DPS, and she falls under their umbrella. So now you've got Austin going out and activating their system, and they're going to come down and bring people in. Every region has a number of people assigned to it, just like the Forest Service does for either fires or prairie fires or forest fires. So, you know, there's, as scary as it sounds, getting people here to do the job would not be a problem.
How much downtime do you think there would be?
That would be the problem. Because when you're in a rural area, it's going to take a little while to activate everyone. Matter of fact, give you kind of a prime example. Let's say hypothetically we had a tornado come through, and that tornado hit a section of town, and it decimated the whole town, like it happened up in Oklahoma or in Joplin, Missouri. Well, you're going to have Texas Task Force 1, which is the premier search and rescue. It's going to take them hours to get activated because they're volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
My son, for instance, is on one of the task force for wildland firefighting. They got activated to go, not for firefighting, but to activate, and went to Port Arthur when the hurricane went through. It took them 24 hours to be activated to get down there. So you're going to have some time period.
All right, Chief, what about this? You have a bad situation. The internal workings may know what they're doing.
Right.
But I think one of the, something that gets thrown in the machinery, a wrench in the machinery, would be the public. You have a fear, the public has a fear, and you have a lot of them as compared to you. How can, one, the citizen population of that local area cause major problems? And two, why don't we do normal information or teachings to the public so they have some kind of concept idea as to what to do in a situation like that?
Well, you know, we used to have the emergency broadcast system.
Right.
You know, this is only a test, and then the annoying beat. You know, for
that's
worth radio,
it, man. It's but, worth because you don't you're going to listen at the moment.
But we used to have this sort of education, this sort of training in place. We haven't replaced it.
That's like the light on your car coming on. You know, I'm out of oil. The light comes on, or I'm out of gas. It's an idiot light. Yeah, I should have known that before. So then the broadcasting system comes on. Hey, it's happening. But if they don't have that concept idea before it happens as to what to do or who to look for or who to ask, that could cause.
There is a system in place, and it still needs a little refinement. In Milam County, they use a program called Code Red, and what Code Red does, it reverse calls people. Other cities, bigger cities, have a different system that goes. It's like a 511 system that refers all calls to people with basically landlines. And I'm not sure if it works with cell phones. I really don't know that, but you've got to have a way of getting your public notified. Because the lack of information creates havoc, I'll tell you right now.
Well,
and what you have to do is you don't want people reacting and making more of a mess, more of a problem than what you've already got. So that's why you have to inform the public with something. I believe that, and this is, there's some of the politicians fight with me over this and have fought with me in the past. But I was very open with the news that happened within a city. And you have to be, because everybody knows it, but unless somebody officially tells them about it, then they start making up their own stories.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get the truth out there so people know what to fear, know what not to fear.
Transparency.
Yes, it's transparency. And that's in safety. It's a transparency in safety. Not necessarily that you're trying to scare people, because you're not, but you want people to be informed. If we look at things like this, and I know this sounds kind of crazy, and I just want to mention this, but this is a different world. Just like I talked about on my top of my show earlier, we're not in the same world. You've got to have an emergency management plan. You've got to know what to do. People have to be on the same page. That's why people from all cities in this county or whatever county you're from, they must come together and they must understand what each one's role is in a situation. Because I'm telling you right now, in this city, for instance, and I can't speak what's happening right now. I don't know. Wouldn't even try to fathom what's going on right now. But when I was chief, we had two officers on each shift. We had, I was there, and then we had our investigator, and all of us had training in ICS, Incident Command. We all had training in emergency management. If something happened, we had a situation worked out how we were going to handle it. Could we do it by ourselves? Absolutely, positively not. We had to rely on the fire, the sheriff's department, the highway patrol, and anybody else that we could get a hold of that would help with a situation like that. And God forbid, let's say, once again, let's use my scenario of a church. And that's my biggest fear is churches and things that are, the schools are pretty much locked down during the daytime now. But schools, churches, and open meetings, open fields, gatherings of people, it scares me to death. And if something does happen and things like that, then you're going to have your first responder, your first police officer that's going to approach. They're not going to stage. They don't train to stage anymore. They immediately attack.
Chief, because of that, you would think that the license to carry holder would be a valuable asset.
As long as we knew who they were.
And know who they are.
Yes.
And you kind of have an idea of their training. There's a lot of people out there with a license to carry who should not be carrying, but it's not me to say you can't carry it. But I'm telling you, if you were in my class and I saw you and I want to call it out like it is, you need to train. And others who are good, it would be great to know that they're on your team. And you can say, hey, with a push of a button, a text, or a phone call, they can help you out, or they're on the scene, they can do a lot of stuff. Now, I wanted to ask you something, too, because we're running out of time here. Is there any way to present to the public those tabletop exercises in real life? Like, for example, down in Florida, they were having attack helicopters run the streets, freaking people out. I thought it was the weirdest and stupidest thing to do. It's either because they needed a city to do it, because military needs training in that aspect, but I don't think the populace knew. It was freaking them out. Is there any way you could do those exercises here, get the public involved? And it's almost, well, I don't want to say game, but it's almost like, hey, this is fun. We're all learning the experience.
Actually do. And it's usually at Leadbetter when they conduct the sort of emergency response crisis. What is it? Catastrophe drill? Or what is she named?
Yeah, the tabletop drills. There is ways you could do it. I wouldn't even venture and say how it could be done, because that would be stepping on Ms. Reinder's toes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never do that, because she works too hard for this county.
No, I don't mean anything that nature to cause a problem. I was just wondering, would that be beneficial?
Yeah, the more information you get out on how to react during a drill, I mean, how many of y'all remember, and I'm telling my age now, but how many of you remember in the 1960s,
when you were
a kid, you did drills getting under desk because of what reason? The Cuban Missile Crisis. Or how many of you had to go sit out in the hallway, put your head between your legs and kiss you? No, I can't go that far. But put your head between
tornado
your legs
drills.
In case of a tornado drill. We still need to practice, and we don't practice it enough in this country. Our schools don't, our churches don't, our gatherings don't.
I know at Ben Milam, we do, We have very regular fire drills, and we do tornado drills, and we even do active shooter drills. You've got a bunch of kids, you know, we have 550 children from 3 to 9 years old there.
And that's
need to know how to deal with
that's
it.
That's right. And they do. And they need to. And, you know, people need to understand that this is it's going to happen. I mean, police cannot, the FBI cannot, they cannot stop crimes of this nature. We like to think we can, but it's not. You can preach all day long gun control, but the only thing that's going to do is the criminals are going to have the guns. You know, you have to plan on what to do when it happens. You got to be in code yellow all the time.
Situational awareness.
Yes.
And we were just talking about this, having a tire with air in it, spare tire, that's code yellow. Having a fire extinguisher near a fire or a wood stove, that's condition yellow. You're just being prepared because you know stuff can happen. All right, guys, let me ask you this. If we could, in the next minute, round up what could be a conclusion to this topic, what would you say?
I would say, folks, read. Get on the internet, read what to do, learn what to do. Learn about the seriousness of it. Learn about how to protect yourself and your family. It starts with your family.
Yeah. Don't wait for someone to do it for you.
Yes.
Be active in your own training. Be active in your own safety. Be active in your own your family's safety.
Right.
Don't wait.
You said something that just made me think of a picture. When they're having the flooding down there in Houston, there's a person in a flat-bottom boat being pulled by somebody, and the water is only up to their calf.
Right.
And I'm thinking, really? And the person in there looks okay. It just makes you kind of wonder. Are people just like, okay, 911, I'm going to sit here and wait. Be proactive.
That's it.
All right. I just wanted to talk about this because I thought it's important to know about. Go to the Milam County website, and you can check out the emergency management plan for yourself. Become proactive with you, your family, and your community. So, Trey, let's take us out. We're going to take a long break. And when we come back, we're going to have Master Cindy Key talking martial arts. So we'll see you on the other side.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Central Texas Martial Arts of Rockdale offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
Hi, Master Syndicate here, and I'm here today to talk about elbow guards. Elbow strikes are very important to go with this. You want to get your hands up if somebody's punching at you, or even if they're trying to grab, get your hands up, cover your face. You can twist your body and move your elbow inward. You can move your elbow upward. You can even come in and attack at the same time that you're blocking, following up with the heel palm, maybe an eye strike, hit to the throat, grab their neck, and use a knee after that. This actually is really good if you have a shoulder. I have a shoulder injury right now. It's really good for stretching the shoulders too, and you just work your elbows up and in with a twist. You can guard to the outside elbow guards, strike backwards, but I feel like this is really important. Some people call it a helmet guard. Some people call it a boxer's guard. I generally use it, call it a boxer's guard because your hands are up here. Usually if you're fighting or even if you're trying not to get hit with an open hand, your hands are here. You can close and use those elbows. And if you're blocking with your elbows and they're punching and they hit their hand on your elbow, it'll zing you a little bit, but it's going to really hurt their hand because the bones are small in the hand. So I really, really, really like these. You really want to remember, though, when you're guarding, if somebody is consistently trying to get a hold of you, grab you, or punch you, just because you're blocking doesn't mean you stop there. You always want to have an attack after that. So you can block, come up with a throat strike, finger strike to the eyes, heel palm, or another punch. That would be your choice. I tend to like open hands because I don't like hitting my small bones in my hands anymore. Unless I'm going to hit a soft target like a groin or solar plexus. Yeah, I do. I like groin shots. I do. You need to hit the groin. I'm telling you, the guys don't like that. So if you're being attacked by a big guy, knee to the groin, a front kick to the groin, you know, a strike to the groin. But elbow, protect your face. Your head's very important. Your brain's very important. If you can't see or your nose is bleeding or your teeth are knocked out, that's not a good plan. And you want to protect your head. So elbow guard, follow up with hand techniques. And this is Master Cindy Key. Be safe.
Ms. Key, tell us how they can get a hold of you. What, any special going on? What's called? I don't know. Tell them about what you do and how they can get involved.
Well, I teach traditional martial arts. It's John Saw Masul, and it's a mix of different things that I've learned and my instructor has learned. And he's made it into John Saw Masul, which means Way of the Warrior. And we train on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 5:30 to 7. I have an advanced class from 5 to 5:30. If I could get enough adults, I would do just a completely adult class. But right now the classes are mixed, adult and kids. But
and the way you do it, I mean, you start from the beginning and get advanced. So anybody, I mean, I don't want people to think that I can't do that. Sure.
No, everybody can do it because, honestly, I teach leaders, and if I have a baby in here, I just have the advanced students help them.
I'll get into the mic.
Who, me? Oh, I'm not talking in the mic. Gosh,
no.
That's a first.
You were facing her.
Okay. All right. So what's the way they can get a hold of you?
They can come by. We're off of Highway 77, 1 mile south of the 79-77 junction, or call me or text me at 254-721-2775. And I have a Facebook page at Central Texas Martial Arts. Also,
Master Cindy Key is a black belt. Like the thing we're food. Okay, so we're in the ring. She's going to be pawing at you like a cat. I've been in the ring with her. My gosh, I'm scared of her. So she can teach you a lot of stuff. Miss Key, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Great. I'll tell you what. We've only got about a minute or so.
Run Merlin.
Yeah, that'll work. Until next week, everybody, keep powder dry.